This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 355. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
I wish it was under different circumstances, man. Definitely a disappointing loss, but I do think there's a lot of interesting conversation that's come out of it. So I'm looking forward to talking to you about it.
You know, we lost at Lambeau, but we did get a victory in this game.
Oh.
We got a victory over the narrative that Pete Carroll runs the ball for three quarters and then turns the ball over to Russ to allow him to win the game. That narrative that went down for this game.
Because he just never turned it over to Russ?
They never really ran the ball.
Well, they never ran the ball either. Yeah. It was definitely an interesting game that way. It was tough to see Russ at 60, 70%. Like, I understand that the narrative of the whole he made it back, and I'm not begging on him for getting back early either. Like, this it was freaking amazing. It really was. But he wasn't even close to 100%. He was like 60, 70%.
Am I going to have the conversation with you that Geno Smith should have been out there instead of Russ?
Absolutely not. I want 60, 70% Russ out there instead. And that's not even, whoever's debating that, you can just shut your dirty mouth.
Okay, thank
you. That's not even a discussion. I mean, we can have it if you want.
No. I wasn't sure if you were going to push it. We don't need to manufacture a conversation around it because I agree. There's no conversation to be had. 70% Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson was fine enough to go out there and play. Obviously, he ran the football. You know, he tucked it and he missed a couple throws.
He missed quite a few. He missed quite a few.
Yeah.
At least five.
He missed a couple badly.
A couple really badly. Airmailed them. Yeah.
And then a couple that the touch just wasn't the normal, you know, especially on the deep throws. It wasn't the normal Russell Wilson touch.
He couldn't get it out there. He couldn't get it out there. There's a couple times he had guys that had a step on the defenders and he just couldn't push the ball far enough down the field. And that's okay. Like, I'm not even mad at it. I mean, it's just how it was for that game. And we're hoping that another week of recovery and it'll be even a little better. And also, you could tell that he wasn't 100% with that hand just by the way he held the finger.
When the first time he went down to the ground and it showed the replay, you could see him, you know, bending his wrists back to avoid, you know, having his hands hit the ground, which,
right.
I mean, that was a sign right there. Oh, and I mean, the fact that they didn't run under center at all. I mean, Pete talked about it after the game and how they just didn't want the added trauma to his finger. Well, that just goes to show you that it's not 100% if you have to be concerned about that kind of thing. And yeah, they managed it. But the fact that they scored 0 points is a problem.
Yeah, that's never good. I don't know that that's... And again, this is a kind of a microcosm of the whole season. The reason they scored 0 points was a bunch of little things all together. Like, none of it... It's not no big things, but two of the largest things to me and two of the most infuriating parts of this game both occurred in the first half. And one was 4th and 1 early in the game, plus side of the field. And we catfishing punt. That enraged me.
Do you count the plus side of the field when it's past their own 40?
No, we were across the 50.
No, you weren't. They weren't across midfield.
Oh, I thought they were. Okay. Well, it was close to midfield.
It was close. It was go for it range for the as short as they ended up placing the football.
Yes. Go for it. Go for it. Another thing that was frustrating to me was, well, I guess three things. The very first drive, Russ runs for the first down and the referees call it a first down and then reverse the call so that it's not a first down before it's reviewed. You know what I'm saying? Like they did this a few times in this game, called it one way and then reversed the call on the field before it was
reviewed. It was actually reviewed. Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, then we got to go with the ruling on the field. Well, the ruling on the field was one way to start with. Like there was a couple
ruled
times
it on the field. And then you came back and you said the ruling on the field was the opposite of what the official had just ruled. And
yes, that happened a couple times throughout the game. But the fact that Pete didn't challenge that. I know it was the first drive. I know that you're challenging spots and stuff.
Pete wasn't winning that challenge.
Why? How? How are you not winning that challenge? It's so clear.
This is Sky Judge without Sky Judge. They came down and they said, you need to place the ball back there. It was clear as day to me that had to have been what happened, is that the officials got word in their ear to place the ball back. Otherwise, why do you move the ball back? And if that's the case and you challenge it, then they're just going to go with what the officials called the ruling on the field.
How can you even, as Sky Judge, justify that call when you watch the replay? The camera was right on the first down marker. There's none of this, oh, you can't tell because of the angle of the ball or the angle of the camera, where the ball is when he goes down. None of that stuff. It was clear as catfish day that he had the first down by half a yard.
Look, there were replays that were more egregious than that, that looked as if the play on the field was called wrong. And they went with the call on the field. The Daryl Taylor fumble recovery, where Aaron Rodgers had his hands on the ball and they called it possession. Okay.
Yeah, it was at that point in the game where I was just like, oh, okay, I guess we're just not winning this game. But the fact, I guess I still wanted Pete to challenge that first down out of the gate. It's being aggressive. It's about being aggressive. Turtling up on fourth and one early in the game.
That was the was the same one. I say don't use the challenge and just go for it. Go for it on fourth and one.
Okay, that's fine too. And then running a play with 8 seconds left at the end of the half for no effing reason. I don't understand that. I just don't. Before they snap the ball, I am screaming at the screen, what the hell are we doing?
Just get the field goal team out there.
There's no, I'm not saying that's a guaranteed 3 points. I'm not saying that because it's a long field goal. It's in Lambeau. It's been cold. I get all of that.
You got the clock stop. You got 8 seconds on the clock. You don't even need to run one of those plays to, because essentially what they were doing, they were running a 4 second play just to throw the ball out of bounds and take it down so that they're, once you kick the field goal, the half's over.
Right. For why? I mean, Green Bay had done diddly poo to that point. Like, what? What are we doing? Like, Aaron Rodgers is going to somehow score in 7 seconds, 5 seconds, whatever it is after the field goal's kicked. Give me a break. And then you got to kick it off too.
I think the worry is that if you miss the field goal in that situation, then the ball goes back and then they get one shot at the end zone, right?
Whoop-de-doo. What are the odds of that being a successful play? But instead,
well, what are the odds of getting a holding call on a play where all you're trying to do is throw the ball out of bounds?
Okay. Well, so here's another part of this that is infuriating. So you run a play and number one, your quarterback's not right. Number two, your offense has been struggling. Number three, it's a 3-point game. Number four, usually in these situations, how many times this year have we been in field goal range and gotten backed up because of sacks or penalties?
Yeah.
It's happened numerous freaking times. So why invite that into this situation at all? And then there's always the possibility of the thing outside of your control happening that backs you up, as in Damian Lewis gets catfished and dump trucked with his hands out in the air flailing. The other guy pancakes Damian Lewis, and then he gets called for a freaking hold. Look, I don't complain about refs much. I don't blame refs much, but that was so catfish egregious. I don't understand. I don't understand how that can be called. I really don't. And that was such a horse crap call. And it's the accumulation of all of these crap calls and poor decisions that you couple that with Russ not being as sharp as he can be. And yeah, you end up scoring 0 points. And a game, and this is my question to you. When you go back and you think about this game, in your mind, is this game more of a 3-0 loss or a 17-0 loss? Because I think it makes a difference in the way that you view what needs to happen with this team going forward.
Well, I felt all 17 points, but I did give the defense the benefit of the doubt late in the game, because they were gassed because the offense could not stay on the field. I mean, there's not very many times where you see any running back run through Bobby Wagner on the way to the end zone. And that makes me think that the defense was just gassed at that point.
Oh yeah. I mean, beyond gassed. And now that they're playing well together, you've got to manage this time of possession thing. This is another huge part of the Seahawks season. I mean, people are pointing at all the yards that the Seahawks give up and all that. Well, they're 31st in the league. All right, fine. But yards don't matter. And they've really played well. After this Green Bay game, you have to admit that the defense has been legit good for four games. They're legit good.
Yeah, the corners are good. Now that you have DJ Reed and Trey Brown figured out, we got to see a, a big Trey Brown hit on fourth and two to break up a pass. That was
amazing.
That was great.
That was amazing. I can't tell you how much I was gushing to Brittany about what an amazing.
Come watch this break on the ball.
It was just so perfectly done. It was, dare I say, Malcolm Butler perfect. I mean, it really was that good in the recognition, in the physical play, and the timing. It was just amazing. I just Trey Brown has had one of those a game as he's getting more and more playing time. I think they found somebody there, and that has to make you just so happy.
Finally, they draft a dude from Oklahoma, and not only does he make it on the team, he's actually good.
Actually good. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm fired up about that. And Jamal Adams had a good game on defense. Had his first pick as a Seahawks player.
Yeah, it was more of an arm punt, but that was a gimme. That was a gimme interception. That's fine.
Yeah, but he caught it. He has had how many balls in his hands that he has not held on to, and he held on to that one.
True fact. And he was being disruptive in the backfield and in all of that stuff.
Yeah, he had two quarterback hits, led the team. Mm-hmm. That's a problem.
Well, I mean, is it? When you're taking on a Green Bay Packers squad, which is a good squad.
Aaron Rodgers is the guy that tends to get rid of the ball quick.
And you basically hold them to 3 points. Like, I honestly can't put the final 14 points on the defense. I really can't. I mean, when you are on the field twice as much, three times as much as your offense, there comes a point where those points are now on the offense. They got to convert. They got to keep the chains moving. And the offensive third down numbers, like that's the problem. That's the massive problem.
Yeah.
Not so much who's getting the pressure on the quarterback, because they're getting enough.
When you think back to Russell Wilson's game here against the Packers, do you put it more on issues with his throws or on his decision making?
Late in the game, I would say decision making. Early in the game, throws. There's a little column A, a little column B. Because I think you have a distinct take on this.
To me, the decision-making was more of the issue than the throws.
I would go the opposite direction, but I understand why you would think that.
I did go back and I watched it because, you know, we chatted at halftime a little bit about, because I thought Russ was looking for kill shots in the first half, and that's why he was holding on to the ball. The first half issues were more with the offensive line. He did have one where in the first quarter, it was the second play of the game. And I think that's why this one stuck with me, is that rather than taking the short, easy shot as DK's coming out of his break, he's looking left deep downfield, and then there's pressure. And then he has to, you know, try and get out of it.
Yeah. And it results in a throwaway.
Right. Then there was the flea flicker and this was the opposite.
That's not Russ.
But this was the opposite, because on the flea flicker, he had Swain open deep on the left side, and then they took the check down, which was covered up.
Yeah. No, he did, and he missed DK on a post or a seam route at one point in the game as well, where he was wide open.
That was in the second quarter on the third and five. And he was I don't know if I put that one on him too much, though, because he was really getting squeezed in the pocket. And
yeah.
The problem was that he backed up rather than stepping up. And when he backed up, he backed into the sack, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, again, I think that's a little bit of the rust. That in that moment, that was one of the ones that pointed to me towards rust more than anything else that he did in the game. The pockets kind of collapsing around you, and he had room to step up. And you see this with a lot of quarterbacks when they haven't played for a while. Instead of stepping up into the pocket, you start to fade back a little bit. And that's what he did there. I think if he had been playing for the last 3-4 weeks, he steps up into that pocket and it's a big play.
Yeah. And so you said in the second half, decision-making was the issue for you more so than the first?
Well, I mean, that's where I see most people talking about it, because of the deep interception in the end zone. And then also the first interception.
The first interception was definitely DK was covered. Like, the dude was all over him.
I don't know what you're doing. Yeah.
And he had Lockett open in the middle of the end zone.
Yep. That was the one that really bothered me. The other one, pushing it downfield, while it still pissed me off because you didn't really have to do that, and you still had a chance, technically.
Oh, because you were down 10-0, the throw to the Tyler in the end zone. I I don't know if that was on Russ. I felt like Lockett slowed down, and I don't know if it was because
That not on Russ? There's two dudes standing there.
There's two dudes.
Where's he gonna run up into the stands?
Yeah,
he was out of field.
I've seen Tyler split those defenders so many times and catch that ball in the end zone. But Tyler, he held up a little bit, and I don't know if it was because there were so many underthrows, but he slowed up, and then he couldn't get to the ball where the safety was waiting to catch it.
Yeah, well, and you also had two wide open checkdowns.
Oh, yeah.
And so this is something that not just our fan base and our star quarterback is having to deal with right now, but just take a look at the Kansas City Chiefs, because it's the exact same story right now. Everybody's playing this too high stuff. You've got two great quarterbacks that are used to getting their chunk plays. They're very aggressive players, and they're having a really difficult time. And I don't know why, just playing the position. Just play the position. You hear Russ talk all the time that he wants to be the greatest, and like he talks about Brady and all that. You know what Brady does? Checks it down.
Yes. And the thing was too, I wonder how much you put it on play calling, because it doesn't seem like there are enough check down options on the regular for this team. Where,
oh no, there's either check downs or shallow drags or whatever you want to find out there. More times than not, there's an option for it. And in this case, this game, he didn't take the checkdowns when they were available. And then there was a few mid-range throws outside the numbers. And these are the ones where he airmailed that were drive killers.
Yeah.
Like that's just it. So that, you combine all of those things, and now your offense is off the field, and the defense that's playing well is getting ground into eternity. And my one problem with the defensive play calling is, look, I understand that the bend and don't break thing has been working really well in terms of points and third down numbers and blah, 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 blah. Right. Here's the issue. If your offense can't make sure that they stay on the field and make the time of possession a little more equitable, then you need to take an extra risk here and there with some blitzes and stunts and things of that nature that, sure, you might end up giving up a big one, one every 15 of them, but three out of every 15 of those times, you might get off the field instead of getting jellied all the way down to the 10 or 5 yard line. Like I guess at the end of the day, when I'm thinking about this game, I think very much of this as it's more of a 3-0 game than a 17-0 game. Those last few points, it was already done. It was already over.
Yeah.
You could just tell by the way the game had developed. It's the lack of aggression by Pete that drives me crazy. It drives me crazy. And it's not the throwing versus run and Pete ball versus Russ ball or any of that crap. It's the, look, in today's day and age of football, we're just a little more aggressive. The entire league is. You have to go for it on a 4th-and-1 when it's in that area of the field, around midfield. You have to take those challenges when it's a 50-50. Like, I don't understand why there's, you got to send a blitzer and you got to play tight. You got to get the corners up and really make it tough on the quarterback.
You even see it with teams with the lead. We can get into it during our NFC segment, but the 49ers against the Rams, they're up by what, 3 scores, and they go for it on 4th-and-5 anyway, just to make sure they put the game away.
Exactly. And so I feel like the people that see this game as a 17-0 game, which that's the real reality. Like, don't get me wrong. They're the ones that are calling for Pete's head. I think most people that see it more like a 3-0 game, and it was close, it was right there, and we damn near won in Lambeau, which we haven't done since, I don't know, the Nixon administration. I think they see it as, I don't want to get rid of Pete, but I need him to be a little bit more Riverboat Ron, when it's all said and done.
There is definitely some increased pressure on the idea that Pete Carroll needs to go. I feel it.
I feel it in terms of the risk-taking aspect of it. It's not the philosophy of ball as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, this season could easily be, you could reverse this record so quickly with just a couple little plays here and there. I mean, they've been blown out by the Vikings, and that was it.
Yeah.
And then your star quarterback gets hurt for 3 games. So it's not like this team is as bad as its record is. And I know that your record is who you are at some point and all that, but I don't know. I'm just not there with the get rid of Pete stuff. Like the offense is more imaginative. It really is. And there's more of that multiple motions and looks and things like that to confuse the defense. And obviously our defense isn't the same as it was during the LOB days in terms of scheme, because the whole narrative back then was we play, you know, cover three or single high, right? And you know what we're doing and you won't beat us because we're just better. And we've seen now for a couple seasons here that the new scheme is obviously fairly freaking complicated because it's taken players a few games to get it figured out. But once they do, they're pretty locked in and it's a good defense.
Yeah.
So he is changing and evolving. It isn't just the same simple stuff that we ran in 12.
No, they're missing. The pass rush is lacking. I'd say the run game is lacking. Alex Collins is fine, but he's hurt too.
He's fine.
And they don't really have a good answer for that since Penny hasn't worked out and they haven't been willing to just bring in another guy rather than they're way too patient with some of these dudes. That's you where fans can look and say, okay, it's done. It's over. Let's find somebody else. They're like, oh, well, maybe it'll give them a couple more weeks and then it ends up being the end of the season and nothing has happened. They have to find other options at running back. I think back to one play in particular in this game where the one Eskridge catch, where it was kind of the jet sweep, the little pop pass.
Yeah.
Alex Collins took the worst angle possible on that block and just whiffed. And Eskridge gets, you know, stopped in what, 3-4 yards back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stuff like that, that just, and that can kill a drive. Is that easy for Seattle?
It really is. And that's why I don't really point to scheme as much as maybe other people and getting rid of Pete. And I think at the end of this year, heads are going to have to roll at some point. To me, if you're going to make me put somebody up there on the sacrificial block, that's one of the more higher ups, it's Schneider. Nobody's talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the drafts have been really hit or miss. The free agents and in trades and things like that, they've had a pretty sketchy track record too. I mean, ever since those first couple years of the draft, and everybody says, well, Pete's the one who's pulling the trigger on all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. I don't really think so. I think John has a lot of autonomy over the roster.
I don't know. That's one where I really don't know, because I do feel like Pete likely has the final say, but I wonder, I don't know how much he exercises that. And in that case, maybe he does give Schneider more autonomy. I don't know about that one.
Schneider would not still be here in terms of he had options, right? Like they were trying to get him to Green Bay 4 years in a row, you know, the last 3, 4, 5 years. I mean, about every other offseason, you hear stories about somebody trying to pry John Schneider out of Seattle. He wouldn't stay if he was stuck under Pete Carroll's thumb.
No.
So to me, the bigger problems here are roster problems. And when I say you got to put somebody on the, you know, chopping block, I'm not even sure I would put Schneider up there, because what I'm complaining about is doing a league average job instead of having those elite drafts like he did early on in his tenure. He's not a dumpster fire GM like anybody from the Texans, anybody from the Jags, anybody, you know, the list, anybody from the Jets.
I think the issues, though, the biggest issues are Pete Carroll issues that aren't going to change.
How so?
The in-game decision making of being aggressive.
Okay. All right. I'd go with you on that.
And so how is he going to change?
Well, then you just do it. You just change. Now, I don't know.
Which is weird, because if you go back to Pete Carroll college days, he was the go for it guy. Like the early years in Seattle, it was almost too much.
Yeah.
And he dialed it back, but he dialed it way back.
Yeah. You talk about getting hormonal and doing crazy stuff, right?
Yeah.
Where
are the hormones? How do we get Pete to be more hormonal like in the early days?
So I guess what we know is that we need to get him in touch with like one of these online companies, like Roman or whatever it is, those testosterone companies, get him some hormone replacement therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's it.
Oh, Frank Thomas, right? Doesn't he have the...
And Doug Flutie. Big Hurt and Doug Flutie.
There we go.
Yeah, he needs the Big Hurt Doug Flutie treatment. So, I guess that to me is when I look at this game, which was highly winnable, which is the same conversation we've had through all six losses this year. I just need Pete to trust his team and be a little more aggressive.
So there's the Pete side of this. There's also the Russ side of this too, though.
Yeah. Yeah. He wasn't 100% and he missed some throws and it killed some drives. And then there's also the same struggle he's having as Patrick Mahomes in just playing the position. Be Mike White. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know if you can coach that into him, though. I don't know if it's possible.
I don't know how you can't. And I don't know how you can't as a player now for, what, a full season? The end of last year and then the beginning of this one? Go through all this and go, oh, this isn't working the way that I'm playing. Maybe I ought to try something different. Like, I don't understand how that is unfixable.
I don't understand it either. But it's also not one of those things where I'm willing to be so frustrated with Russ that I'm like ready to blow it up. Oh, trade Russ away and let's move on. No, if I'm keeping Russell Wilson on this team, no matter what.
Not if you're the national media or Sports Illustrated or Connor Orr. One of the members of the Ring of Honor posted that article and I read it and it was so infuriating. It was so infuriating because just the premise is, well, you get rid of Russ. Like it's time to just trade him and blow it all up and start all over. And a lot of the justification for that was, he's easy to trade. I mean, compare him to Deshaun Watson and all his issues who wants to be traded. And he goes down or Aaron Rodgers and, you know, him being mercurial or whatever that word is. Mercurial?
Yeah.
Mercurial. Mercurial?
Mercurial.
Yeah. You know, and his sort of demeanor in, you know, goes down the list. He's like, well, and then you've got Russ, who's probably the most easy to manage superstar in the entire league. Like, you know, he always says the right things and da, 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 da. Yeah, exactly. He's one of the most easy to manage superstars in the entire league. Why do you trade that? Why would you trade that? So I can get another headache. Oh, and his other point was, yeah, and you, I mean, you'll get a haul for him because in the draft, there's just not a surefire quarterback prospect in this next draft or two. Then why the catfish would I trade Russ when the draft picks I'm going to get back to draft a non-proven prospect in the draft? Like, why would I take that risk? Give me the upside for the Seahawks other than Connor Orr and the rest of the national catfish media would finally get Russ out of Seattle because apparently he's too far away to write about. Like that's the only thing I can figure is why they have such a boner to try to get Russ out of freaking Seattle.
I'll say this again. There is not a trade package big enough that you can put together to make the Seahawks want to trade Russell Wilson.
No,
it's not possible.
It's just not.
And if it is a trade package big enough, the other team is stupid.
Yes.
And like then you're already trading away a guy who is a potential star quarterback for an older star quarterback.
Right. I mean, even if you took in the equivalent value of the Herschel Walker trade and combined it with the trade to get Ricky Williams in the draft by the Saints, and you put all that together, the equivalent of that from some team out there to give to the Seahawks to get Russell out of, no, I'm still not doing it. I'm still not doing it. And then the question becomes, well, if you don't do that, I mean, he's going to be unhappy this offseason and you got to keep, all right, fine. Like, if he's unhappy, what is it that you want, Russ? Like, if it comes down to Russ or Pete this offseason, that's an easy decision. See you later, Pete.
Yeah.
Like, I love Pete. But, yeah, I just, this is an easy discussion.
You can find a coach. You're going to lose on, the culture aspect.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, absolutely.
Coaches are more replaceable than star quarterbacks.
100% yes.
And Tom Brady showed us that. He went and won with Bruce Arians.
Very true. Very true. Overcoming BA daily. That's what Tom Brady's doing. But I'm not ready to give up on Pete. Depending on how the rest of this year looks, I mean, that could change things a little bit. But I think as long as Russ is cool with it and he's on board and likes the idea, I'm willing to give Pete one more. This will be his first losing season since Russ got there. If it happens, it still might not even happen. Brandon, they could still, and that's the other thing. After this game, everybody just writing off the season, blow it up. It's all over and everything. It's not over. They can still lose one more game and make the playoffs. They don't even have to go undefeated.
Oh, no.
To have a solid chance to make the playoffs.
Well, look, you and I going into this week were saying that you could lose this game and still make the playoffs because, I mean, you had to look at this game and go, I don't know if they're going to win it just because they've never won in Lambeau.
Right. And so then they played really tough. Russ is obviously going to get better. The defense looks good. And they really are set up to go on a tear here. And everybody's like, nah, blow it up. I'm ready to be done. Trade Russ now. Get rid of Pete now. Well, make John Schneider, you know, take the long walk now. It's like, well, come on, guys.
I don't think that this team is going to make the playoffs.
I don't either. It's a thin margin right now. Like it would be, the odds are stacked against them, but it's definitely not impossible either.
No, if they play at the level that they're capable to, then yes, they can absolutely do it. I just have my doubts that based on what we've seen now through these weeks of the season, that they can play at that level consistently enough to go 6-3 even.
We also thought, but at week three, that there's no way in hell this defense could ever come together and be a real defense.
But this feels like last season, to where they get the defense worked out and then the offense, they can't get it together.
That's the maddening part about these last couple years with Pete, is that like he can get one unit, you know, sorted out at any given time in the season, but he can't get all the units together.
It's really looking like if they're going to do it, it's going to have to be without Chris Carson. That's not sounding good. I don't like what I'm hearing from Pete Carroll when he says that Carson's not making any progress.
Interesting. I thought he was back at practice this last week.
He was back at practice last week, and then he sat out practice Wednesday, and Pete Carroll in the Wednesday press conference kept it real short, but essentially made it sound like he wasn't at practice and he's not making any progress.
I think the Chris Carson part is actually a good example of hypocritical fans. I think this points towards a lot of hypocritical fans because, like for me personally, and you, and almost everybody we've ever talked to, they all said when they signed Chris Carson to this deal that, you know, it was below market value. We were all fired up about it. Chris Carson's a good player and, you know, he's going to be a major factor going into this year if he can stay healthy. And it was a risk. And that was all a risk we were all willing to take. I mean, I'm sure there's a few people out there who are dissenters, but I can't find them. I haven't talked to them.
Yeah.
So a lot of the decisions that the Seahawks have made, we've all been on board for at the time. And then when they didn't work out, be like, oh, they got to go. They suck. What were they thinking?
I haven't said that with any regard to the run game. It's more that you knew Carson was an issue. You brought in Collins, which was a good move because you have then a competent guy to go with. To me, I would have cut Penny prior, at least a couple weeks into the season, and found another guy, whether it was Mark Ingram, bringing him in. There's been other guys.
Literally anybody.
Yeah. Dallas and Homer, they're nice players to have kind of on the fringes, but they're not a guy where you're going to give them a full workload in terms of the run game like you would Alex Collins.
No, they're great special teamers and, you know, fine depth pieces, but no, I mean, I'm with you on the, why did we give Penny so many chances? Why did we draft him in the first place? Like, it's well documented, my feelings.
Hey, if they wanted to give him one more chance to see if he could come back from injury, play it out, see how it went, you know, for the first couple, you get him some carries and live action. But after what we saw from him, the first couple games where they've given him a what should have been enough carries within a game to know ahead of the trade deadline, you're looking to make a deal.
Who's trading for Rashad?
No, you're not
Penny.
Trading him. You're getting rid of him and giving up, you know, whatever the Texans got for giving up Mark Ingram.
There you go. Okay. That I understand for sure. For sure. But going down the stretch here, let's think about this real quick in terms of playoff whether or not it's a possibility or not.
It's a possibility. We don't have to go game by game. It's a possibility, but it's
I'm going to run through it really quickly. This doesn't have to be like a big deal. So Cardinals have stunk lately. We don't even know if Kyler's come back. If he does come back, then you know what? He's probably going to be arrested anyways, and this is the start of their demise. So you got Cardinals next week. You have the Washington football team, dumpster fire. You got the Niners. Who the catfish knows with them? Like that
they're a dumpster fire whenever they're playing any other team but the Rams.
Right. And then the Texans, enough said. The Rams, who have started their Matthew Stafford getting injured and poor decision-making spiral. Then the Bears, who they're just waiting for Matt Nagy to go. And then Motor City Dan Campbell and the Lions, who have yet to win a game. They got their first non-loss the other day, so that was cool for them. And then you have the Cardinals again. Those are all freaking winnable games. They're all winnable games. You can still lose one in there. You can still lose one in there. I give it a 35 to 40% chance that they make the playoffs.
Okay, well, the first loss that I think will come then, I think Kyler's going to play in this game and the Seahawks are going to lose to the Cardinals.
Hey, if you want to reverse jinx the Seahawks right now, I'm with you. I'll let you do that. But I'm telling you, the beginning of the Cardinals' demise has begun. It's happening. They got waxed by the Panthers. Waxed by the Panthers.
Yeah. No Kyler Murray, no D-Hop. Maybe D Hop doesn't play in this game either. I don't know. I think if Kyler, the thing is it's not the Cardinals offense that I'm really all that concerned with. It's the Cardinals defense. They're going to play the exact same way that the Packers defense played the Seahawks last week. And if they do that and the offense makes no adjustments from what they did the previous week, we're going to see the same result against the Cardinals team.
We will definitely not see the same result that we saw against the Packers. Also, keep in mind that the Packers did the same thing to the Mahomes the week before that we played. They're a good defense. They're a very good defense.
I think the Cardinals are
okay. The Cardinals are okay.
I think they're good enough.
They're old.
They're good enough on the back end. Chandler Jones is going to get his 18 sacks against Russell Wilson in one game.
That's got to end.
Because he always does.
Yeah. And Dwayne Brown has been showing his age a little bit this season. I mean, there's been a few times. I mean, he gave up a sack this last game where you're just like, oh, Dwayne.
He's been hurt and he's had two bad games.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a little unnerving. But Russ is going to be better. I think with him being a little more injured, that they have a little talk and they're like, dude, like, you're not Superman right now. Just take your checkdowns. Take your checkdowns. And then once they start, jumping those checkdowns, then take your shots. And that's just the order of operations that needs to happen. They will figure that out. And Kyler is going to be hobbled.
We've been talking this way for 2 years. Just take your checkdowns and then go for the deep ball, Russ. He's not changing.
He is going to change. It's going to happen. Like, he's too smart. He is too smart not to finally make that change.
I think he's smart enough. I just don't know if he's...
Well, then Waldron needs to have the balls to pull him aside and be like, dude, what the catfish?
I think there's a pride component here.
Oh, I know it's a pride component.
So, yeah, I'm a little bit concerned that it can't turn around right away.
They're going to beat the Cardinals.
Okay.
They're going to beat the Cardinals.
Okay. I'm not optimistic. They've won one game at home this year, and it's been against the Jacksonville freaking Jaguars.
Right. Who are the new version of what the Cardinals always were.
And then Jacksonville leaves here, and they go and they beat the Bills 9-6.
Exactly. Hey, talk about being pessimistic about a game. If you're a Jags fan, do you think you're beating the Bills? Do you think you even have a 3% chance? Ow.
Okay, so you're calling...
The Cardinals are unraveling. I talked about it weeks ago, and it's happening.
This would be the game that would tell me that they're unraveling if they lose this one.
When they lose this one. Yeah.
See, you can even tell by the way that I'm talking about this. I'm not excited about this Sunday's game.
I understand. But I'm going to speak this catfish into existence for both of us.
If it's not Kyler.
Colt McCoy, baby.
Colt McCoy again, who took us down last year.
Yeah, I know.
Colt's one of those up and down guys, though.
Absolutely.
And he was down last week.
Well, he was up the last time that he played us. So that therefore he has to be down. And he might be an up and down guy, but he's like one up, three downs.
I do think that our corners, if DeAndre Hopkins is out, well, you know what? Even if DeAndre Hopkins is in, one positive takeaway that I had against the Packers is that Devontae Adams did not dominate us. And so that has me optimistic that maybe DeAndre Hopkins will not be that dominant guy against us, like you can see Devontae Adams do.
Absolutely. They actually doubled him a bunch.
I know.
See, this team does learn and change. They do.
And then they gave up a ton of screen passes.
Well, they're always going to give up a ton of screen passes. Every team gives up a ton of screen passes. It's the kryptonite of this modern NFL defense of playing too high stuff. I mean, that's what it is. And for whatever reason, we can't run one. So that's neat.
No. And then when they try and run one, that's like flea flicker style.
Which I thought was a cool play. I honestly thought it was a cool play.
It was a cool play because
I was disappointed that didn't work. Yeah.
Yeah, they recognized it.
And which I don't know how. It hasn't been on tape.
And you actually had a guy. Well, because you just had a guy who was actually covering the running back or the tight end.
Tight end, yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. I just, again, this is the same. It's the same thing that it's always been with this Kingsbury Cardinals offense, man. Like, they better play up. They better take away all the 5-yard outs and the 5-yard slants. The one, and this was the one super infuriating thing that this defense does that Rodgers took advantage of on one play to Adams in this game. And if I can see it from Montana, like the defense ought to be able to notice this. So they're in 3-by-1, right? Or 2-by-1. They've got three receivers out there. Two to the left, Adams in the slot, receiver out, singled up on the right. And the Hawks do this all the time where they don't put a man heads up on the slot receiver. Like, they expect like the zone guys to rotate in front of them or something. I just don't get it. I don't get like letting them trot out a receiver and just you don't cover them for a little bit until you do.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand it. I don't freaking get it. And the funny part is that Aaron Rodgers looked at that and it was like, oh, look at that. They're not going to put somebody on Devontae right out of the gate. He's walking to the line of scrimmage and he gives Devontae a quick little salute. He puts his hand up to his eyebrow, whoop, just quick. And it was kind of subtle and it was directed right towards Devontae. He just runs a 2-step slant. Rodgers takes the snap, rises up, hits him, 6-yard gain. Free 6 yards.
Yeah.
Free 6 yards because we just simply don't have a dude heads up on a guy. Can't have that against the Cardinals. Every guy's got to, you got to press every dude and have a guy on him from the beginning. Before the play even happened with Rodgers, I was like, they're throwing it to Adams.
Well, yeah. Anytime you leave Adams uncovered, you know Rodgers going to take that every single time.
Especially after the salute. What else are you doing? Like, somebody's got to be watching that.
I think it is going to come down, though, to the quarterback that they face and what Russ can do to adjust with everything that we've talked about throughout this first half of the season, which is the same thing as we saw the second half of last season.
But this is different. This doesn't feel like the second half of last season. The offense isn't like the second half of last season. The offense was just freaking broken. Like, it couldn't do anything. This offense moves and you know, sputters and kind of stops and starts, but it's not completely broken. I mean, Russ hits a couple easy throws, and all of a sudden you've got two or three more drives that are extended. You know, Pete rolls the dice and goes for it on a 4th-and-1. And the thing is,
maybe it'll happen. Maybe this will be the week that these things come together.
And Pete, he can't just do it once. That's the thing. It's like, because I have a feeling like he'll do it once, it won't work, and he'll be like, see, this is why we don't do it. I want Michael Dixon to punt it into the end zone and have him start at the 20. And, you know, and have a 30-yard change of field position.
Hey, now.
You got to do it.
Hey, now.
You got to do it enough. You got to do it enough to have the odds work out in your favor like they finally do. You can't just do it once, fail, and be like, look, see?
Michael Dixon had a punt against the Packers where he actually, it dropped at the 5 and then scooted out like hard right out of bounds. He had a good one this week.
Neat. And that's great. And I'm not even saying Dixon's a bad punter, but I mean, what are the percentages looking like with this at this point? I mean, What is he, 15% on these?
Yeah, I don't need to get into it. I'm just recognizing one good aspect to this last game against the Packers.
All right, that's fair.
What do you say we get to the second half of the show?
Yeah, we can talk about the spiraling Cardinals, the spiraling Rams. The Niners found a nut like a blind squirrel. This is going to be fun.
Getting into the second half of the show. This is this week we had a game where these are the games that I like because I know that I can at least be happy with one team losing. When the San Francisco 49ers play the Los Angeles Rams, it's a no lose situation.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I watched a little bit of it and, you know, Brittany walked by and she's like, why are you watching this? You hate both these teams. I was like, I don't know. There might be an earthquake. I mean, something good could happen here.
Not that you want to joke about earthquakes happening in San Francisco, but yeah.
Why not? The Bay Area can slide into the sea at any given point, and I'm totally cool with it. Everybody that knows better, you should have already left by now. So if you're still there, it's your fault. I'm just saying.
It's funny to me that, because I did pick the Niners to win this game.
Mm-hmm.
And people were surprised by that somehow. But the San Francisco 49ers and Shanahan own Sean McVay for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how that works, but it surely does. The fun part about it is that you don't have to get too worried as a Seahawks fan that the Niners are going to like somehow put it together all of a sudden. Because, this is their one thing.
This is their one thing that they can do well, and we won't have to worry about it for the rest of the season. They play the Rams one more time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the 49ers can have a couple more good games, and it's fine. They'll still finish at the bottom of the division.
Absolutely. You know that's coming. And, boy, how fun is it to see the Rams on a losing streak and everybody starting to be like, oh, geez, well, Matt Stafford, while better than Jared Goff, like, he still has his flaws. Oh, my gosh.
You mean they got Odell Beckham Jr. and they're not awesome right away?
So that was one of those where the trade goes down and I saw, you know, a few people kind of melt down about it. Like, oh my gosh, now the Rams got Odell. And I'm like, sweet, sweet.
I wanted him.
I would have taken Odell.
I wanted him to go anywhere else other than the Rams too.
Oh, well, I was more mad about Von Miller going to the Rams than Odell. Odell hasn't been Odell for like 3 years. And on top of all of that, he's a head case. On top of all of that, well, I guess with Robert Woods going down, he'd probably get a few more targets. But when they signed him, I mean, Woods hadn't torn up his knee yet, and Kupp was still the number one option. It's like, well, how many targets is he even going to get? He's going to be DeSean Jackson?
How long is Woods out for?
The year, I think.
Well, that's too bad for them.
It's too bad for Robert Woods. It's not too bad for the Rams. Let's make sure we get our sports hate right here. I hope Robert Woods has a speedy recovery.
When I said them, I was referring to Robert Woods and his knee.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. But for the Rams and their organization,
oh, yeah, screw those guys.
Yeah, somebody, I want to say it was somebody in the Ring of Honor posted a picture of the tweet that the Rams put out of them being like all in, like it was some gambling movie reference.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
it was John Malkovich with, you know that movie, right?
I don't know. No, I don't. I'm pretty weak on the pop culture stuff.
Rounders. It's Rounders.
Okay, sure. I'll take your word for it. I'm not a gambler, and so I don't really find a lot of fun in gambling movies. So I don't really watch that many. But yeah, they're 0-2 since then. And this is the football gods coming back and being like, oh, you think you can just cheat the system and have endless money to spend and trade off all of your assets in your draft picks? Okay.
Yeah, it's not magically going to work out for you just because you push all your chips to the center of the table. That's not how gambling works.
That's right. That's right. Ask Vince Young in the Philadelphia Eagles and Nnamdi Asamoah and that whole group of guys. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Although you might be able to convince me that gambling works because I put $12 down on the Panthers, like we talked mm-hmm. about, on PJ Walker to nice. Win straight up against the Arizona Cardinals. And it happened.
It happened.
I think one of our listeners time. Did it too and also won.
Oh, seriously?
Yes.
Please don't take any sort of gambling advice from us. Do not put your hard-earned money anywhere on any game. Like, just don't do it unless it's tiny amounts. You know, like that's it.
It was slightly more money than we put down because it was 12 pounds instead of $12.
Okay.
But the result, you know, it was also a five right. times.
How rich are we?
You and I?
Yeah.
$50.
What?
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to take another $12 out of that $50. And what's our bet for this week?
Oh, gosh. Are we doing that?
Yeah. Let's run through the NFL schedule real quick. It'll be fun. Okay. See which one we want to do.
Let's see. Week.
This has always been my, if I were ever to do gambling on games, this was always going to be my strategy. It was always going to be $10. I don't know why I didn't think about 12 because 12 was obviously better.
Yeah.
But yeah, just take $12 every week and bet that. And then whatever your winnings are, you put that in the gambling account and then you see where you're at the end of the year.
And then if you lose, then you double down the next week to try and win back the extra. No, wait, that's not how you're supposed to do it.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. See, that there we go. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Got the Patriots and the Falcons.
Nope.
Colts, Buffalo Bills.
That's interesting. Okay.
Bills are favored by 7.5.
Well, all right. Keep going.
Panthers, Washington football team.
Who's favored in that game?
Carolina by 3.5.
Okay. Put that one in the back of your mind.
It kind of feels like maybe an upset by Washington.
Really? Okay.
Well, we'll see. We're not on the same page on that one.
No, Chase Young is hurt.
Oh, that's true.
And they're all riding the Cam thing right now.
And then the Panthers, they actually have an okay defense.
And Christian McCaffrey's back, yeah?
Carolina's definitely the favorite, straight up. You got the Bears and the Ravens.
Okay.
Lions, Browns, Jaguars, 49ers.
Ooh, what's the line on Lions, Browns?
Cleveland's favored by 10.5.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The Lions with the points. I mean, so far, that's the one.
I don't know. I'm not that. I've been bad against the Lions just with my picks to the point. No,
but the Lions have played everybody close.
That's true. They are 5-4 against the spread.
Yeah.
49ers, Jaguars. 49ers are favored by 6.5.
Sure.
I don't know. I think I'm going to pick Jacksonville in this game.
I mean, you could. That's one of those who knows.
Packers, Vikings.
That Vikings lose that game.
Dolphins, Jets. Gross. Although you wouldn't have to be tempted to watch one, I suppose.
Joe Flacco was starting for the Jets.
Ugh. Saints, Eagles. Texans, Titans. Bengals, Raiders. Cowboys, Chiefs.
What's Bengals, Raiders?
Pretty much straight. It's pretty much a pick 'em. Vegas is favored by 0.5.
Where are they playing?
Vegas.
I'd pick Cincy straight up.
That's what I'm going to pick, but I don't know if I feel that great about it.
Okay.
Cowboys, Chiefs, Cardinals, Seahawks, Steelers, Chargers, Giants, Bucks.
Lions plus 10. What are the odds? Like, what do we get if we bet $12?
So plus 7.5, a $12 bet gets you $27.
Is there a 9.5?
There is a 9.5. I'm just trying to find a range here.
Yeah.
$12 bet at 10.5 is $23.
Oh yeah. Then do that. Why take the harder gamble there for a whole $4?
Okay. I'm curious how many points we can that we can actually get. 17.5 points.
Yeah.
At $12 wins you 17.
That's free money.
Is that your $12 bet back and the...
I think maybe you get 17 total. So you're 12 back. So you're up 5.
Okay. Hey, the first part was free money at this point. Why not just go with 17.5 points and get another, even if it's only $5, just add it to the bin.
Right. See, now again, being a novice or never really gambled at all, especially on sports, it's always seemed to me that it makes more sense to make bets that have small payoffs, but a high probability of happening rather than trying to go big and chasing the quote juice.
Okay. I think we came up with it. Lions all plus right. 17.5 against the Browns.
I love it. I love it. I only have to sweat out 2 Jared Goff fumbles for no reason throughout that game.
And then maybe I'll take the under in this game too.
Oh, what's just, the
just
over
for, just for my picks, not for betting purposes.
Gotcha.
Well, we got that figured out.
This is, who knows? Maybe we'll become the the Tiny Bet podcast here at some point. And at the end of the year, our goal will be to be up, you know, about $73.
That's fine. That'll take us out to dinner. We can have our end of year dinner celebration.
There we go. I like it.
Let's welcome some members of the flock.
Hell yes. Even after a loss.
Even after the loss, we had some people come in. Of course, we have our executive producers, DCH, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, and Kevin Watterson. And coming in for this show, an executive producer for the rest of the month, JC Schilling, came in with his $145.44 annual donation.
Hell yeah. I appreciate that, JC.
So thanks to JC. Oh, I think JC and I talked because Patreon is doing a thing now where they're charging certain states sales tax, and Washington State considers membership within a community as a taxable thing.
What?
Yeah. And so,
because our community is based around a Seattle franchise, the state of Washington believes that if you live in a different state, they can tax you for supporting that group.
No. JC is in Washington.
Okay.
And so in Washington state, they tax it where you live. Patreon does.
I guess. I mean, I know that other things operate that way, so I guess that's normal, but it still seems shady.
So what JC did was he brought his Patreon donation down to where he still got all the benefits and then supported us via Venmo at the level that he would rather support us through Patreon.
There you go. Yeah. You don't get to tax the Seahawkers podcast, Washington State, and its members. Yeah.
I don't know if we're talking about tax circumventing on the podcast now, but talk to your tax professional
and get your advice. We're talking about gambling. We're talking about circumventing your taxes. Just wait for my do better. Like, this is going to, it's all going to come full circle.
Jason Kyler Yano came in with an increased pledge from $36 to $60 a year. Jason says, long overdue upgrade to $60 a year. Part happy Veterans Day to Brandon, part props for some of Adam's surprisingly healthy mental health comments in the past episode, part no more pin time to win, part I might not be able to spend 3 hours on Sundays watching full games, so you're becoming exponentially more important to my Seahawks fandom. Plus,
catfish!
It, you guys deserve a raise, and a huge part for being there for us to process this roller coaster of a season. I found that after bad losses, I can't even watch the highlights or listen to Pete Carroll's Monday morning show until after I've listened to you guys. Makes me feel a bit codependent, but
catfish
it. Thanks, guys. Pins out, wild cards in. Here's to a realistically hopeful second half of the season. Jason from Portland.
Hey, Jason, I think pins out, wild card in. I like that. That might be the ride or die statement for the rest of the season. Until we lose two more times.
Until then. And
yeah.
And one coming this weekend against the Cardinals. But yeah.
I don't know. Was that a backhanded compliment that he was surprised that I would have a healthy opinion about mental health issues? That feels a little backhanded. Like, why would he be surprised?
Saying that he's surprised about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but I'll take it either way.
Because, you know, you're not so much of the touchy-feely. You don't come across as a touchy-feely kind of guy.
Probably not. But that doesn't mean that, like, those things aren't important. You can be both. You know, you can be a defense, you know, minded, fairly conservative in some ways, like throwing the ball, old school approach to football, and still take a risk now and then. You can have both. You can do both things. Like, this is how I approach a lot of these things in life.
Yeah, thanks to Jason. Jason has been with this show, I think, forever. Yeah, so that's very cool. Just even the fact that he's continued to stick with us. Don't think of it as an overdue upgrade, but it is a very welcome upgrade. Thank you, Jason.
Well, I want him to change his thought process, too, about him feeling codependent on us, having to listen to us before he listens to Pete. I think it's the other way around. We're codependent on Jason. Like, without him and the rest of the flockers, you know, this whole thing wouldn't go the way that it does. So, yeah.
Thanks to Jason. Thanks to JC. If you want to get in the flock, you can go to getintheflock.com. And you can also go to SeahawkersPodcast.com/support. Oh, I was going to bring up the fact that I got a new way to support the show here this last week. I am going to be on the Wisdom app after the game on Sunday.
Okay. Does the app give you wisdom, or are you dispensing wisdom?
I am dispensing wisdom via the Wisdom app following the Seahawks game on Sunday.
Okay. I guess I don't... You're going to need to explain this. What the hell is the Wisdom app, and why do you think that you're Seahawks Yoda?
It's a platform to where you can go on and share audio. It's another place where people can go and hear content. It's on the Wisdom app, and you can go to joinwisdom.audio/Seahawkers podcast after the game. Let's say 7 p.m. Pacific time on Sunday, and I'll be there, and you can, and we can come. It's a place to hang out, and we can chat about the game.
Gotcha. Well, we'll see if I actually get to watch the game live. I will be in Oklahoma over the weekend, and I have not been to this mill before, but my coworker Alec has, and he says it's all been lined out. So there's an off chance that I would be done in time to watch the game, but I don't know. I'm not optimistic.
Okay. I was just counting on me doing this, and if you could make it great.
Fine. If you don't want me there, you can just say it to my face, Brandon. You don't have to, tiptoe around it.
I mean,
I'm not touchy-feely guy. I'm okay.
I wanted you in Houston, but that doesn't sound like it's going to happen either.
No, because I do have to take care of a client that has been an amazing client to me and my family for a very long time. And if I didn't do it on that weekend, he kind of would be in a pickle. So
Houston, it's going to be me.
Well, hey, look, you bailed on me for the Titans game. Yeah, so
you practically owe me.
Yeah.
And Clinton's going to be there.
Exactly. That's better anyways. Having Clinton instead of me is definitely an upgrade.
I don't know how to respond to that.
Just agree, because it's correct.
I don't have to agree with anything. I want all three of us there.
Well,
what I want.
Hey, if the Seahawks have been playing...
Tell me what I really, really want.
I'll tell you what you want, what you really, really want. And you want all three of us together, but the Seahawks would have to play better to have the triple threat of all three of us together.
It's true.
It's really their fault.
I'll put it on the Seahawks. Yeah. Got to put something on them. Mm-hmm. Reminder, you can go to tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com. We got the Russell Wilson, the straight pink four patcher. Mm-hmm. It's actually not pink, straight green.
Yeah, straight green, baby.
And it was Kevin Russell that won the DK.
Okay, the next DK tiny pieces of Seahawks stuff that we get, I want it to be a lock of his blue hair when he either cuts it all off and changes it, or just, you know, dyes it a different color or whatever, because blue hair DK is out of control. And I think it's the blue hair.
You think that's what's doing it?
I do. I think it's been since he went to blue that things have started to slide off the rails a little bit.
There was nothing wrong with this game. By the time that he got into his little kerfuffle there, the game was over. They had already, you know, this was a 3-point loss. And DK Metcalf had no issues in this game at all.
This has been an up and down year on the emotional side for DK in a lot of different ways, you know?
What did he do wrong?
Well, he hasn't done anything technically wrong, but he's definitely feeling all the feels and getting a little too high and a little too low about all of them.
And this last game against the Packers was awesome, because not only did they... Well, okay. It was weird because they kicked him out, but they didn't announce that he was kicked out, but they put it up on the TV screen that he was kicked out. And then he tried to come back in, and the official said, "Hey, you can't be in here." But how often do you see when a guy gets kicked out, like, they make sure he's being escorted off the field? And that was a weird kind of everything around that.
The officiating crew for this game was uneven at best. Let's put it that way.
It was very even. Every single call went against the Seahawks.
Well, consistent.
Outside of the DK toe tap, which was that the right at the end of the first half that actually got him into field goal range? And then they didn't even review that, which I thought was weird.
I thought so, too. But I don't think that, I think from the one camera angle that they had that was any good, the Packers, was it to the Packers sideline? I think it was.
It was to the opposite sideline of the cameras. Yeah,
right. The players standing there kind of were covering up where his feet were. I don't know that you would have gotten a good look.
I don't know either, but it was...
I don't know. Sky Daddy Judge couldn't see it well enough, I guess.
I don't like that the Sky Daddy Judge is against us.
Well, he's definitely for the Packers. I don't know if they're necessarily against us.
Maybe.
Another thing about that broadcast and everything. You know, at some point, you got to let
Catfish
go. How many times do we have to see the completed Hail Mary against the Packers and hear everybody whine about it and misrepresent that it was a Hail Mary?
It was funny, though, because juxtapose that with the Daryl Taylor fumble. Tony Romo was like,
thank you. Thank you.
he was like, well, wait, wasn't that one simultaneous possession, too? And then they nobody responded to it. They just moved
glossing on. Glossing over, moving on. Romo said something that made sense here. That was a catch. It's always been a catch. It's not a replacement ref problem. Get the freak over it.
See, I'm willing to give up. I'm willing to give up that Daryl Taylor fumble as long as we can acknowledge the correctly called Hail Mary. That's
right. Just be consistent. That's my number one thing with people. But then, I just want people to be consistent.
When a player catches it in the end zone and then drops the football before, you know, completing the process of the catch, that should probably be a drop rather than an interception.
As per the rule, that one was tough. You can honestly make an argument either way on that play that I could support.
If it worked in the end zone, that would have been an incompletion.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
They seem to come up with these different rules that exist in the end zone that don't exist anywhere else.
Well, it's a magical place, Brandon. We don't know because we didn't visit there this week.
Looking at the standings for the Pick'em League, Honey Hole Hawk in the lead, tied for the lead with Unlimited Hakra, 96 points. Darth Jamal showing up in the top four with Peaceful Easily Feeling.
There we go.
Wow. People stunk this week. Honey Hole Hawk got 5 picks correct. That's how Darth Jamal with 7 picks was able to jump into the top 5. And with 8 picks correct, tied with German Seahawks Love, Danger Russo, Saban Bernd. Number one, though, with the tiebreaker, Spanking the Kitty.
Yeah, I knew it was going to catch on.
Spanking the Kitty with a week 10 win.
Do we get to bring that back when we play the Lions later this year?
Sure, we can bring that back anytime.
Yeah, okay. All right. I'm looking forward to Spanking the Kitty in week 16.
As long as we do, in fact, spank the kitty in that game.
It's happening. Don't worry about it.
Got some email. Jerv Reed came in and said, birthday is on November 15th. Happy birthday, Jerv. All I want from the Seahawks is a win at Green Bay. I am sorry, Jerv.
Didn't happen.
We have to play almost perfect, but anyone can do it with Russ healthy. This team can. P.S. Have you guys heard of the book called The Chase by Clive Cussler? It takes place in the early 1900s, spy novel, and mentions Flathead Lake. Don't know how much time you have for reading, but it's a good read.
Oh, well, that's definitely going to be on my list. I'm trying to build like a little mini library here in the tiny cabin in the woods, mm-hmm. With a bunch of books that I haven't read that might be interesting. You know, just for those times when, I don't know, the whole world ends and there's no internet and need something to do.
Got to prepare just in case.
Yeah.
Just like everybody out in the woods, all your neighbors out there, they're all preppers.
Oh, yeah. We got, again, might do better is coming.
Dave in Jersey says, hey, guys, apologies to Adam. Phantom penalties aside, Rusty Russell aside, lazy ass play calling aside. Someone please tell the Seahawks to practice screens for like a good solid hour a week. I don't want them to magically grow a draft pick this year. I don't need them to win a Super Bowl. I would like those things for sure. My biggest wish this holiday season is for the Seahawks to defend a screen just once. Just
catfishing
once. In the fourth quarter, with Green Bay up 10-0, and just trying to drain clock, they had the whole defense in the box to stop the run, and somehow, some effing how, the lone running back in the backfield leaked out and nobody even thought to follow him. Here's a good idea. Since Jamal is hanging back lately, just put him on the running back every play.
Catfish!
Aaron Rodgers.
Catfish!
Our screen defense. And
catfish!
Lambeau friggin' field. Sigh. Go Hawks.
That was an excellent email. I mean, I think I probably for Christmas this year, just send to the VMAC as a Christmas present to the Seahawks, just a window screen. I'm just going to wrap it and just send it right to the VMAC and be like, more of these, please.
How about we actually wrap presents rather than in wrapping paper, but screen door screen?
screen door to screen. I've got a whole roll of it because I still want a screen and a porch. So it might as well use it as wrapping paper for all things Seahawks. I love it. Yeah.
Ethan comes in too, says, we can't stop a catfishing screen.
Yep, there's that too.
I do. The ones that I know that come in during the game that are just venting are always fun. Yeah. So thanks, Ethan.
Oh, yeah. No, we're here for you, man. Like, you need somewhere to vent that energy. The email to the Seahawks podcast is definitely a great place for it.
The Bard comes in, says, hi, fellas. Well, it didn't turn out the way I expected, as I thought we would score, which we have done in every game the last 10 years. The result was predictable, though, even if I wasn't allowed to pick the Packers. All parts of the team seem to play well, apart from the quarterback, but I'm not going to have a go at Russ, as I will give him the benefit of the doubt and say he was just rusty. I think, too, that DK should give his shoulder a flick, as there are a couple of chips on there this season. But I thought the Packers secondary was superb. DK, just play football and do what you're bloody good at. I still think a wild card is something to push for, and the two leaders of the NFC West are not unbeatable either. So let's stay behind them and see what happens. Just go Hawks and enjoy the ride, the Bard.
See, the Bard, he's on the same train as I am. DK needs to get rid of the blue hair. I'm thinking maybe orange.
It's complimentary with green and sure. Blue.
Yeah. Well, I just know he had done pink not long ago and he's done green. I was just thinking of something new, so it didn't feel repetitive for him.
Yeah.
But also get him out of blue hair, DK, and into something different.
He needs a mid-season change is what we're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would go with orange.
It's not, I mean, it's Broncos colors. So I mean, there is
it's
that.
It's not about team colors when it comes to DK's hair. He doesn't have to, you know, have all of his being Seahawks colors.
Yeah.
Okay. It goes under the helmet. And then it's, you know, then it's blue. Dark blue.
Okay. I'm fine with it.
I don't know. Do you have a color suggestion?
I'm fine. I have no complaints with DK other than maybe a third down pass that he should have held on to in this last game. But I'm fine with it. He's one of the top guys in the league this year.
I'm not talking about just this week. I'm talking about the entirety of this season.
Yeah. I have no problems with anything that DK has done for the entirety of the season.
Okay. I just think he's a little roller coastery right now.
On the list of things that we listed to start the show,
mm-hmm.
DK is like down at number 50.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, his hair is at 49 because I think, you know, the hair is the problem. So
if I were to pick between DK things and hair things, I would say that, yeah, the thing that has to go first is the hair.
Yeah. And then the rest will follow. Yeah.
That's just not high on my priority list for fixes.
Well, I mean, you can take care of big problems by taking care of lots of little problems. You know what I mean?
Pete Carroll will suddenly be aggressive if DK has orange hair.
Yeah. Look it up. I mean, that's how that catfish works.
You never know.
You never know.
On to do better and better at life.
All right, man. My do better this week is for grocery stores in both apparently England and then apparently there's been a little bit of this in the U.S. as well lately. But given that their shelves have been a little emptier here and there, instead of just having empty shelves, so people look at it and go, oh boy, there's empty shelves. I should probably think about the consequences of that. You know what they're doing?
They're covering them up.
They're printing out catfish pictures of produce and then putting them in the bins as if we're all that stupid that when you reach out for that ear of corn and your hand goes bump into a freaking piece of cardboard when it's printed with corn, that we're not going to tell the difference. Like, I don't understand, like, the mindset of this. It is so ludicrous and so stupid. And it lulls people that maybe aren't looking for that product into thinking that that product is stocked up on the shelves instead of being like, oh, crap, that's random. I went to Home Depot today and I just couldn't buy caulk. You know, like it was just all gone and it's all gone throughout town. Like instead of people like seeing these weird little shortages pop up and having that kind of maybe spin their brain a little bit so that they start thinking about maybe doing some things to be sure that them and their family will be safe going forward in terms of having all the supplies they need. They do this, which is totally phony and totally stupid. All you people that are printing things and putting it on the shelves instead of the actual product and thinking you're fooling us, do better.
We've become North Korea. This is what happens in North Korea.
Is it?
I don't know. It feels like something that happens.
I don't even think they bother with the printouts in North Korea. They probably don't have the ink. But
they just tell them to visualize it. Visualize all the food that we have.
Yeah. So here's your favorite crazy uncle, Prepper Adam. I want to talk to you all for just a little bit. Just go out and just get a little extra shelf-stable food.
Stock up on cock.
It's called caulk. And you say it like Brittany does, and I had to help her with that.
I didn't say it wrong.
I just didn't like her talking about other caulk as much as she was. So maybe
Brittany and I are talking about the same thing.
Well, if you are, I support your decision in that and your need or want for that and. We can go from there, but otherwise, yes, go out, get a little food, put it on the shelves, just a week's worth for you and your family. Just trust crazy Uncle Prepper Adam and do that for me.
There you go.
Yeah. So start gambling, cheat on your taxes, store up food,
stock up on cock,
and then next week we'll talk about bullets.
It rhymes better the way I say it.
I know.
And I'm talking about chickens. Because you got to have a rooster.
Yeah, exactly.
My do better this week is for whiny freaking 49ers fans. At the Rams game, Kelly Stafford, Matt Stafford's wife, was at the game. 49ers fans talking a little trash, as I'm sure you can expect. So she threw a bit of her pretzel, you know. I don't even know. Was it a bit of a pretzel? Was it the entire pretzel? It doesn't matter. It was a freaking soft pretzel. Mm-hmm. Somebody posted online at last night's game at Levi Stadium. Why did you throw a pretzel at a Niner fan sitting behind me? Who do you think you are to do such a thing? You are lucky you didn't hit me with it because the outcome would have been different for you.
Oh, God.
Show some class and support your husband and his new team with grace, please. I am a Rams fan, and I am embarrassed by your actions last night, and this is why I am sharing with others. Hopefully, you will be more aware of what you are doing in the future and set a better example for your children. Okay, so this wasn't even a Niners fan writing this, but there was a Niners fan involved, and the fact that I'm giving this do better to the Niners in addition to this random Facebook person, because somebody there said that Levi's Stadium security eventually stepped in and escorted Kelly Stafford and her crew away from the area to other seats. So they couldn't handle being hit. If the worst thing that ever happened to me at Levi's Stadium was getting hit by a soft pretzel, then I would go to infinite Seahawks games at that stadium. Anybody getting upset over getting hit by a piece of soft pretzel, do better.
To Kelly Stafford, as a fellow person who throws things out of frustration during football games, like I have a lot of sympathy for her there. And then also, like you're saying, it's a soft freaking pretzel, but I guess the only thing that's softer than that soft pretzel are Niners and Rams fans, because if this is a thing, like, really check yourself. And again, maybe we just need to keep rooting for Earthquake and it all sliding into the sea.
And Kelly even apologized, said, "Girl, I know I'm an idiot." He was saying a bunch of things that were aggressive towards our crew, but zero excuse. I tried to apologize, but in the end, I knew I was wrong. We'll always stand up for my guy and everyone I love. But obviously, you need to do it completely different. I'm embarrassed too. Sorry you had to witness me in my weak moment. So, Kelly, smoothing it over up there. But
yeah, you can't.
Get, you got to admit you're wrong. But at the same time,
yeah.
Come on now.
Come on now. And then the keyboard warrior stuff of, if you would have done that towards me, the outcome would have been different. Like every time I see one of those things online, it's like, it's always the fakest tough guy that's ever been.
Yeah. Or tough girl in this case.
Oh yeah. 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 I mean, that was like a blanket, a tough person.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just so fake about it. There's probably one in 50 keyboard warriors that type stuff like that, that would actually even attempt to back up that talk if you saw them in person. And then maybe one in 1,000 that have the ability to actually do it.
It's
especially,
just,
especially if they're from the Bay Area or freaking LA.
And I will say, can we not throw things at football? Like if we could just all, you know, check ourselves and not throw things, mm-hmm. that would be mm-hmm. fine. But, you know, if you're being a jerk and someone throws a piece of food at you, okay. You know, well, it's a little piece of food. It's not getting beer spilled on you. It's not a punch thrown at you. Like
right
there. This is of the most playful of playful things, like Skittles. Even we threw those at the field at Marshawn when he would score a touchdown. Those mm-hmm. could be, you could probably even actually, I don't know, get,
you could poke out an eye with one of those,
get a Skittle in the eye. That wouldn't feel good.
No, you this never want Skittle pretzel. In the eye.
There's literally nothing bad that can come from getting hit by a soft pretzel.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like it was a sloppy food item either, you know, like something that would then stain your clothing.
If it were dipped in nacho cheese and then thrown, then.
Right. Now we have a different discussion.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Because usually that nacho cheese is lava on top of that. So there's probably burns involved. Yeah. I that would be a different thing. But just plain soft pretzel. Come on.
On to Better at Life. My Better at Life this week is for the tandem of John Boyle at Seahawks.com and at Zip Kalmia on Twitter, because at Zip Kalmia asks, John, who's your favorite Golden Girl? Now, John's answer, not the greatest answer, because he says,
he went with Blanche, didn't he?
He did not pick Blanche. He picked Dorothy, which is, it's a fine pick. Any of them are fine picks. It's just that John,
but Blanche is the generic one.
If I had to power rank the Golden Girls, Blanche would be on the bottom.
Right. I mean, it's clearly Rose number one.
Rose, Dorothy, Sophia, Blanche.
Nope. Sophia, Dorothy, Blanche.
What?
Sophia's number two.
Yeah, I could go with that.
That's not a rip on Dorothy. I think there's like a top three and then like a tier. I think we should rank the Golden Girls in tiers. Like
the Rose, you know, tier.
It's Rose, Sophia and Dorothy in tier one, and then Blanche is in tier two, which is still a good tier.
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
Okay.
So what was Boyle's pick here?
Boyle's pick was Dorothy. And he says, because who doesn't love some quality sarcasm at the expense of her friends and shares a video. The only problem that I have with John is he says, I never really got into Golden Girls, but I remember watching it at times when I was a kid. John, it is never too late to get into Golden Girls. Like, you can remember watching it as a kid and say, hey, I should go back and watch that show over and over and over again. And that's fine. But the other thing is, I'm not going to give John a do better for saying that he never got into Golden Girls, because it's still time for John. And I want to recognize him as Better at Life, because he could have ignored this question and not even put it up at Seahawks.com, but he put it in there. Gave an answer, Dorothy, again, quality answer, one of the ones in tier one, and brought the Golden Girls awareness to everybody. So for John Boyle, Zip Kalmia, Better at Life than Skip Bayless.
So one of the more difficult things as a journalist with your job is trying to decide what are the important issues to talk about at any given time.
Yeah.
And clearly, John knows which ones are important, because he did respond to this question, and I think it was something that we all needed to know. I do have some disappointment, as I know John Boyle is a man of a certain age, similar to us, if not a little older.
We grew up at the time when this show was on television.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how Golden Girls just doesn't end up in your wheelhouse. It's not like you had choices like we do now. Like, I'll forgive a lot of people for not seeing a lot of things these days. Like, there's just so much content. But back in the day, what else was he watching? Dukes of Hazzard reruns?
Well, I mean, it's not the most kid...
MASH?
These are all shows as we were kids. But again, they weren't kids' shows.
But they could be.
And you go back now and you watch it. You go back and watch that show now and you have a completely different perspective. Just like 10 years from now when we're like... Or 15 years from now when we're the actual age that the Golden Girls were supposedly portraying, it's going to change things then too. It's a timeless show, and you can check in anytime you want.
Yeah, speak for yourself 15 years from now, because with the advancements in modern medicine, I don't plan on being, elderly in 15 years. I'm going to be just like this.
I'm not saying that you're going to. I'm just saying that you're going to have a different mental perspective. Your mental perspective is going to be the same. Now, then 10 years beyond that, then or 15 years after that.
Yeah.
Your body perspective will then be matching that which what the Golden Girls were going through at that period of time.
No, I'll still be going strong, but I definitely at that point, having more experience than the Golden Girls at that point, will probably look back at them and be like, stupid kids. They just need to live a few more years and they'll understand a little bit
it's,
more.
It's all about perspective and the moment in time that you're watching the show. So,
yeah. Okay. All right. Glad we got that sorted out.
These are important things we have to discuss.
This is your mid-season Golden Girls check-in, folks, like on the Seahawkers podcast. This is something that has to happen.
Yeah. We will go season by season in the off season, reviewing each show. We'll do that this off season.
Okay.
Especially if we have to do that to avoid any Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll talk, because I don't want to do that again.
It's going to be constant this year. Start mentally preparing yourself now.
By catching up on old Golden Girls episodes. That we can then review in the off season.
Exactly. You'll have a more seasoned perspective on the whole thing after that. That's for sure.
Who do you got for better at life?
All right. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for none other than Russell Carrington Wilson, our Lord and Savior quarterback that we love and cherish dearly. I know I kind of panned him a little bit being like 67% in the earlier part of the show, but just to get back, at the time that he did, in the time frame that he did, truly was a feat. I mean, it really was. And you hear about all of the time and effort that he put into it. I mean, it sounded like even in his sleep, those 5 minutes a day that he sleeps, that he was focused on getting his finger right. And just the time and dedication that he has for this organization and for his teammates and for his career, I just think it's amazing. And he really pushed the limits of it in a way that most people couldn't. And to Russell Carrington Wilson, better at life than Skip Bayless.
There we go. Closing the show with the quarterback that's, he's our franchise.
He's our franchise.
And the Bard brought this up in his email. How incredible is it that we have not talked about our team being shut out in the course of podcasting since 2013.
Yeah.
We never talked about it. We've made it this far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is amazing. And look, the other way you could look at this too, with Russ being a little rusty last week, by getting back so much earlier than people predicted, he got to knock the rust off earlier, which means now he's going to be back to being normal, which means we're set to go on our run as the Rams and Cardinals spiral, and we're going to be in the playoffs, making a run, trying to win a Super Bowl. That's happening. Mark it down. Everybody cheer up a little bit.
Here we go. And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.